Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So, I know you've got a lot going on. But remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
Hi, welcome to the restaurant. Table for one. Yeah, that wait is going to be just the exact length of this podcast. Before I continue my first ever journey through the Harry Potter series, just a few quick announcements. First, I didn't get to do it last time because it was such an announcement-filled episode, but here at Potterless, every month we donate $1 per patron that we have at our team over at patreon.com/potterless, and at the beginning of November, we had 851 patrons, meaning I donated $851 to the Communities Foundation of Texas. They set up a disaster relief fund in response to the tornadoes that went through Dallas a couple weeks back. My sister lives in Dallas. She was not affected, but one of her really good friends was. Their house just got absolutely wrecked. So this one was near and dear to my heart, and I'm glad this relief fund exists to try to help out the families that were affected. If you want to learn more about this charity, you can go to cftexas.org. And speaking of Texas, in just 10 days, Potterless will be live in Houston, Texas with Horse as the opening act. Just a lovely little podcast that I'm a big fan of. Those two hosts are fantastic. The live show is going to be a hoot. The guest for that live show is going to be Johnny Frolickstein, who's been on the show a bunch, the best man in my wedding. It'll be very fun. Eric Silver is going to be in the Horse section, obviously, but he'll also be a part of the Potterless section too. So we've got a wonderful group of guests for this show. We have something really special planned. I'm so excited. I've put a lot of prep work into this. It's a unique format. It's different than anything I've ever done before, so I'm really excited to share that with you Texans in Houston. And if you want to get tickets, you can go to bit.ly/potterlesshtown and get your tickets today. And other live events this weekend, I'll be in Atlanta, Georgia for Conjuration. I have things going on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There will be a meetup. If you want to learn about all the things that I'm doing, you can go to multitude.production/live and just make sure you're following Potterless on social media so that once I pick a place for the meetup, you'll know when it is and where it is, and you can see my face if you'd like to. And speaking of faces of people that I would like to see, we have new patrons to welcome to the team. So shout out to Megan Andrews, Brooke Rankin, Alexandra Kogay-Vexelman, Zach, EJ Klin, Jordy Wright, Jessica Phillips, Gemma Monti, Mila Kabilka, Stephanie Hofert, Zoe Sponson, Aminam, Emma Nelson, Jess Charlotte, Basile, Chevalier, Kundrain, Bardod, Trisha O'Hara, Taylor Payne, Matt Bays, Carl Sharma, Evelina, Francesca Sacho, Sarah Leia, and someone that made their name, you can write whatever here, which is true, as long as you don't write something mean. Shout out to Jovito Mubri, Charlotte, and Darlene Rowell, who upgraded their pledge. A huge shout out to Adam Graham, who upgraded to the producer level status, as well as our new producer level patrons, Emma, Ashley Enstrom, Peter McGrath, Sophie Duda, Jack McMahon, Janet Rose Daub, and T. Pixel Guy. They join the ranks of Vicky, Aaron, Jesse, Natalie, Cloud, Frank, Marchismo, Samantha, Juan, Abid, Rose, Marie, Marie, Lisa, Ramina, Camille, Audra, Eleanor, Ross, Ann, Nikita, Taylor, Allie, Amelia, Sarah, Ben, Rachel, Zachary, Orchid, Vivian, Takari, Haley, Moster, Angelina, Caitlin, Grace, Raul, Ingen, Mari, Alex, John, Noel, Tao, Emily, Robin, Will, Liz, Brandon, Sarah, Claire, Rory, Gloria, Sarah, Patrick, Aliket, Veronica, Lada, Noah, Tracy, Colleen, Jennifer, Friday, Ivor, Naomi, Tyler, Summer, Heather, Vera, Carrie, Andrea, Ella, Anthony, David, Elisa, Lynn, Cameron, Justin, Christine, Jacob, Toothless, Maya, Mark, Polly, Netta, Remy, Sarah, Nona, Z, Nina, Harlan, Noelia, Addie, Brian, Jenny, Nikki, Cara, Courtney, Kine, Amanda, Sabrina, Alicia, Kafir, Lindy, Martha, Benjamin, Sarah, Marta, Stephanie, Justin, Aaron, CJ, Eileen, Violet, Kat, Lindsay, Fielding, Keegan, Miranda, Gale, Mr. Folk, Adam, Christina, Maya, Zachary, Kieran, Heaven, Christy, Lily, Wire Warrior, Floor, Siri, Georgia, Itzel, Topher, Peter, Candy, Skyla, Adele, Professor Threat, Kelsey, Lubin, Malaya, Lena, Daniel, Lili, Elizabeth, Abby, Lika, Michael, Earmuffs, Cara, Tiffany, Kelly, Nadia, Carrie, Jamie, Camillo, Connie, Mary, Imos, Anastasia, Jaden, Nedry, Matt, Riley, Will, Zephyr, Brett, Samantha, Kayla, Lauren, Aurora, Emma, Hermani, Megan, Out of Context, Liam, Milena, Marcos, Ella, Hannah, Courtney, Victoria, Marique, Ashton, Brittany, Phelan, Julie, The Meadows Family, Jennifer, Anna, Fake, Brianna, Kauru, Teru, Sarah, McKenna, Six, Awkward Nine, Anthony, Peter, Heather, Dead Cat Lady, Javi, Darlene, Brad, Thomas, Charlotte, Brianna, Kevin, Lori, Patrick, Chrissy, Alex, Charlotte, Bugaboo, Jarl, Haley,
Steamed Nuggets, and Kurt I Potter,
who never say nice when someone asks, how's it going? Because that just doesn't make any sense. How's it going? Nice. That means nothing past Mike. If you want to be like one of these amazing patrons and get access to bonus content, exclusive merchandise, director's commentary, live streams, you can head on over to patreon.com/potterless. But without further ado, let's get into episode 101 of Potterless, the first of three parts about the movie version of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, guest starring Lauren Shippen and Brigham Snow. Hello, Internet, and welcome back to another episode of Potterless, the tale of a 27-year-old man who finally read some children's novels. It only took him 3 years, and now he's watching the movies. My name is Mike Schubert. I am that grown man, and I'm here joined by two lovely people, both from Atypical Artists. One is in the studio with me. One is across the country via the Internet. So in studio is Lauren Shippen, and across in California via Skype is Brigham Snow. Lauren and Brigham, how's it going?
It's going really good.
Going well.
Are you excited to talk about this absolutely buck wild interpretation of a book?
Interpretation is a good way to put it.
I am so excited, though. I texted Lauren last night when I had a realization because we had talked a while ago about my favorite Harry Potter movie is Half-Blood Prince. Uh-huh. So I literally had for like a week been thinking, oh, this is the one that we're doing. And then I texted Lauren last night. I was like, oh, I just read the text, actually. And that's not what we're doing. So I have to watch a 2-hour and 40-minute movie tonight.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I did not get that text until morning because I'm 3 hours ahead.
Yeah.
Also, is it really 2 hours and 40
yeah,
minutes?
So I...
Oh, it's a chunky boy.
Oh, God, yeah.
They're all over 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. I learned this the hard way when I was first endeavoring on this project of doing movies. I was like, okay, I'll ask people to do it. It's not that bad. And then I asked Paul Bay to watch the first one and he had never seen any of them. I was like, oh, 2 hours and 40, right. That's a lot. And then the second one was 2 hours and 30 something. And then now this one, it's 2 hours and 37 minutes.
Wait.
Wait is right, Brigham, because past Mike said something that was untrue. Hey guys, editing Mike here with a little correction. Movies 5, 7, and 8 are just under 2.5 hours. So technically, not all of them. Anyway. Back to the show.
So all of them are 2 hours and like over 2 hours and 30 minutes. That does not bode well because this movie feels like the longest of all of them.
That is true. I
thought the second one felt the longest.
Yes,
just because the scenes
you.
That they decided to drag out made no sense. At least the stuff here that they add extra things to, like the dragon chase and all that, are cool things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just make up stuff in the second.
Also, the second book is I think easily the worst.
Yes.
And so it does not translate well to a movie, I don't think.
And the other thing with this one is that this book was the first time when the size really jumped. This
yes.
book is really long. And even though the movie felt long, when I was looking up all the differences from book to movie and double checking, so many of the side plots just get axed.
Yeah.
And this movie still feels really long.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we'll get into that. So yeah, for context, Brigham, your knowledge of the Harry Potter series, have you just seen the films? Have you read some of the books? Just so people know where you're at.
When the first two came out, like I read those first two and stopped after that. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty much a movie boy at this
Wait,
point.
What?
That's why he's on. Oh no, I've created a rift in Atypical Artists.
This is my coming out, as it were. I have every intention. James and I actually just got the complete series, so I need to like dig in and redeem my shame. But yeah, no, just the movies.
I'm having like a crisis right now.
Lauren is crumbling.
We started a company together. I was in your wedding. How do I not know this about you?
I duped you.
Oh my God. So you've only read the first two books?
Yeah.
How has this never come up before? I feel deeply betrayed.
I didn't know that you didn't know, and I'm so glad you had this on audio to preserve forever.
We've been to Harry Potter World together.
It's true.
I need to go. I need to go think about some stuff.
Are you happy, Mike? You just broke up a friendship and a company.
Oh, this is great. I've done it. Oh my gosh, I'm like a home wrecker, but for friendships and nerddom. Oh my gosh, this is incredible.
It's like I don't even know you.
Well, thanks everyone for listening. This has been a great bonus episode of Potterless.
And now I'm actually going to do couples therapy for Brigham and Lauren.
It's okay.
We'll get through this.
So yeah, let's get into this film because, oh boy, it just starts off so bonkers. I tweeted this last night when I was watching it, that 17 minutes in, the movie's already off the rails. It's not that the movie is bad. I still really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
There are just so many things that, having read the books, are just confusing of why they change things or add things or remove things.
Yeah.
But I do still think this is a really enjoyable movie. Mm-hmm. Just to watch as a film.
I agree. I think the first two movies are kind of rough for me. The third, everybody loves the third movie, and I think it's a good movie. It is not a Harry Potter movie, in my opinion.
Ooh.
It's just, it's, I love Alfonso Cuarón, but like, what were they thinking?
Yeah, it's very
different. Alfonso Cuarón direct a Harry Potter movie.
I think the director of this is Mike Newell.
Yeah.
And he directed Mona Lisa's Smile and like all these other like really strange movies that it does not make sense that he did this one. So it's
oh,
super
really?
Interesting.
He did Mona Lisa's Smile?
Yeah.
That's wild.
You could say that's Mona Lisa's wild. Hey, this is Editing Mike with a bad pun. Moving on, back to the podcast.
I don't know. I think that this movie feels like a Harry Potter movie, but I don't know. It's hard because some of the decisions that were made in the third movie, I think then like different directors had to grapple with in a way that I personally didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the way that Alfonso Cuarón was like, we're going to put them in street clothes and it's going to be kind of edgy. It's like, yeah. Then in this fourth movie, like they're still in street clothes and they have really long hair and it just feels like gritty in a way that Harry Potter shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then David Yates like tried to kind of correct that in the fifth movie. But I feel like this is kind of a weird in-between spot of like, it's still whimsical and fantasy, but also it's still gritty. And,
yeah. I think the big thing for me with the book especially and the movie, what happens in the book is that it's still very like upbeat and whimsical until Cedric dies. And then it's like almost a completely different book.
Yes.
Everything's fine.
Wait, Cedric dies? Oh, damn.
So.
Spoiler.
So I think that's a little bit lost in this movie is even right off the bat, the intro of the movie, it's dark and creepy and it's underwater. And they show you the graveyard in the intro thing before the title card and all of that. Whereas when I was reading this, I remember it still being much like the first three, happy, upbeat. Sure, we got a little grittiness in the third with Sirius, but it was still like everything's whimsical and wonderful. And even when Harry's in danger against dragons and mermaids and all this other stuff, it seems fine.
Yeah.
And then shit gets real in the last couple of chapters. And I remember finishing that book and closing it with like a, felt like there was a rock, like a pit in my stomach of, oh, this is really different. And I feel like that vibe is there right from the get-go in this one.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's one of the things I really love about this book is that it feels very, you just like, yeah, it's like the stakes are a little bit higher, but Harry's still at school and there's this wacky tournament and it's dangerous, but like it never feels like life or death stakes. And then it becomes life or death stakes. And I think that parallels nicely what like losing, like loss of innocence and moving from childhood into adulthood.
Well, right. I've got a question for you, you book learned folks, based off of like what was presented in the books up to this point, because I was trying to think back to when I saw this in theaters and what, how, like how it affected me. And I remember this movie being the first Harry Potter movie that like opened up the world to me in terms of like the wizarding world where this movie had a lot of like world building with like Rita Skeeter and like all of the stakes that are outside of the walls of the school, like the World Cup and everything. And I remember this was the first time, I remember when Cedric died, where I was like, oh shit, they're not at school anymore. Like they are at school, but like this is a much bigger situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is something I always liked about the movie. But I think why the movie always felt super like bloated to me, because it felt like a lot of Harry Potter wizard exposition, a lot of like world building.
Yeah.
I like Goblet of Fire, but I've always seen Goblet of Fire the movie as like, if that's your favorite Harry Potter movie, you basic.
I mean, it is the sports one, so.
Yes.
Yeah, it really, it's like the one that like every time I would turn on ABC Family or now Freeform, it's like, that's the Harry Potter movie that's on. It's always this one. Because it also feels like the most weirdly quintessential Harry Potter movie because of that. It's just like this compact, like here's all the wizarding stuff.
It does feel a little bit like a series of amusement park rides.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah.
Like there is a degree of, I think the point about world building is a really good one. The idea that like, okay, well, if you like the characters, but you also just like wizards and you know, it's, I feel like the people who, for whom Goblet of Fire is a favorite movie are probably the same people that like are really, really into the Fantastic Beasts movies and Harry Potter world. And, like those things are fun and good, but that's not why I like Harry Potter. Like I like Harry Potter because of the characters and like the way that they interact with their wizarding world. Mm-hmm. And I think definitely in the book, like, I remember the World Cup sequence in the book sort of being a little bit like exposition-y.
Yeah, it was a lot more explaining of who Crum was, why the World Cup was important, what Quidditch was like. There's all these other things where people don't understand Muggle money and Muggle clothes, and it gives you more insight into the wizarding world.
Can I say how relieved I was that on the transition where they're like, the game is about to start at the World Cup, and then it just cuts to later? And I was like, thank God, we don't have to go through a whole thing.
We'll get to that because that is a choice. But yeah, I think the biggest thing with this movie, and as I'll go through my notes that I have here, is that it seems like they were trying to appeal to the most broad audience with this one by just showing you a bunch of whack shit via CGI. They were like, yeah, we're showing this, we're showing that. The boat's going to rise out of the water and be really dramatic. We're cutting anything that matters plot-wise. Spew? Nah, like all these other side characters? No, we got to make time to show cool stuff. And that was seemed like a big emphasis in my brain for what they're really trying to go here was make a movie that appealed to a lot of people. And how do you do that? You just show a bunch of stuff that looks cool.
Yeah, there's a valuing of aesthetics over like substance 100%. in this movie. The biggest example of this, I think, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more later, but my biggest issue with this movie that just drove me up the wall when the movie came out and still drives me up the wall, it's the fact that they made Beauxbatons all girls and Durmstrang all boys. Yeah. And they did it entirely for aesthetic reasons, and it's garbage. It's bad. I hate it so much.
It's bad. I can feel us wanting to get into it. So let's get into the movie. So as I mentioned, it starts off really creepy and really ominous, which I think sets the tone right away, which I don't necessarily agree with. It's got the snakes slithering through the graveyard, and then there's a creepy version of Hedwig's theme that's more dissonant on violins.
Oh, I love that music.
It was cool.
Yeah.
It was pretty sweet. It felt very Succession theme songy, like when it has the string version in addition to having the normal version.
Yeah.
So that was very fun. You then get to the Frank scene where the groundskeeper is murdered by Voldemort. And unfortunately, they change things up. And for me, a big thing when I read this book, when I watched the movie, something I really wanted to see is that the scene is pretty much the same, except Barty Crouch Jr. is there in the movie. He wasn't there in the book, right?
No.
In the book, it's just Wormtail and Voldemort as creepy, tiny little baby thing.
Yeah.
And he's in the chair, and Frank comes up, and then they sense his presence. And in the book, what they say is that the chair swivels around, and then Voldemort kills him. Now, the only type of chair that swivels is an office chair.
Yeah.
Or a bar stool. And they say this is like in a living room in front of a fireplace. So I always really wanted to see them have to show Wormtail dragging this chair around and it's squeaking on the ground and creaking and it's not smooth at all. And this time the chair is just kind of faced sideways and it doesn't really show it. But I remember reading the book. I was like, I wonder how they're going to do this because this makes no sense at all.
Oh my God, I forgot about the fact that it swivels.
Yeah.
In the book.
You can't do that on a chair unless you have, I don't know, wheels under a recliner.
Yeah, I guess there are some like living room chairs that do swivel, like in the same way that there are some that are like rocking chairs, but it's not usual and definitely wouldn't be like in an English country home, I don't
think. Not at all. Not at all. So I was very sad that that didn't happen. And then right after this Avada Kedavra, they cut directly to the burrow. So they go right to where the Weasleys live. And in the books, Bregan, what happens is they go back to the Dursleys and there's this whole thing of the Weasleys coming into the Dursleys to get Harry and bring him to the World Cup. And the scene's actually really funny because
it's really fun.
They do flu powder, so they have to come through the fireplace, but the fireplace has been boarded up. So they all get stuck in the chimney and then they have to bust out. Then Fred and George give Dudley, one of their Weasley Wizarding Wheezes candies that makes his tongue really long and purple. And then it makes this whole scene where the whole Dursley family is freaking out before Harry goes to the World Cup.
Yeah. And like, it's got Arthur Weasley, who his whole obsession with like Muggle things is not really approached in the movies at all. And it's him, you know, trying to be like a normal Muggle person with the Dursleys. And it's cute. But I also get why they cut it out, because like all the Dursley stuff in all the books always feels like a little bit of filler.
Right.
Wait, so quick aside on that like fascination with Muggle stuff, because I forget the movie, but it always frustrated me. And maybe you guys can fill me in on like just general wizarding knowledge of Muggle stuff. But I remember at one point, I forget which movie, but he's going through a turnstile and he's so fascinated by how it works as if he's never seen a turnstile before in the London Tube. How believable is that, that he doesn't know what that thing is? Like they kind of make him out kind of silly in that moment. But is it like wizards truly don't know a lot of Muggle technology and things?
Yeah. I mean, if you're pure blood and you've grown up in a wizarding community and a wizarding family. Like Hermione knows a lot of stuff about muggles because she grew up muggle because her parents are muggles. But like, no, there's a lot of stuff made out of like, especially, you know, Ron and Hermione like arguing about stuff because Hermione will say something, then Ron will be like, that's not a real thing.
Gotcha.
And she's like, yeah, it is. Like dentists are real because her parents are dentists. So yeah, that I think is very realistic.
The problem with that one in particular is that every year they have to bring their kids to King's Cross Station. So they would go through a turnstile
good
every
point.
Single year. So I think on a grander scale, yes, because wizards don't even have ballpoint pens.
Right.
But for that specific instance, no.
Gotcha.
So they go to the World Cup, and what's interesting about the movie is like they're just going, and Harry has no idea what's going on. They haven't even told Harry that they're going to the World Cup. I don't know if it's supposed to be understood that he already knows, but they're just going. And Harry at one point is even asking, where are we going?
Yeah.
Which I didn't know if they were asking, where is the portkey situation, or I'm at the Burrow. What's up,
what
guys?
What are we doing?
But then as they're walking, they come up and you meet Amos Diggory, and then Cedric Diggory hops out of a tree.
Yeah.
Why was he in a tree?
Oh my God.
So weird.
What, like, what is he doing there?
There are so many random hopping out of, like, there's one point where I think Malfoy hops out of a tree later in the film where I'm just like, what the hell? They had so many weird placements of people in this film.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like, aha, I'm here, surprise type thing, but it just comes off really hokey and
you're
strange.
You're in a tree! And it's not a short tree. It's a very tall tree. It's a big dramatic fall. It makes no sense at all. I don't know if they agreed to meet there, which would make sense because then they go to the portkey. You'd think they would just say, let's meet at the shoe. But instead it's like, okay, let's meet at this particular part of the woods, and then they get there early and it's like, well, we got 5 minutes to kill. I'm going to go climb this tree.
I mean, I guess he's like a teenage boy, right? So he's, I don't know, killing time.
So interesting. So they finally get to the actual port key, which is the boot, and the whole dramatic CGI effects of that, they're kind of cool, but it's absurd. It's a lot.
Also, because I mean, it's been a while since I've read the fourth book, but are port keys really that intense?
No.
Yeah, it's like apparating is the thing that's really intense.
Pretty much. I think they both do the same thing where you feel the tug from your navel, like your stomach getting sucked in and then spit out. So with the spinning, it was very strange. And then also what doesn't make any sense is that everyone else has to let go and they get spit out from it. But then Arthur, Amos, and Cedric descend gracefully.
Yeah, like bicycling their feet. It's so weird.
And there's a dramatic sunlight behind it. So I really imagined the music cue in the background of like, I'm walking on sunshine. And I just don't understand what makes them able to do it, but the other one's not. Why don't Fred and George also know how to land?
Yeah.
It's so strange.
I get what they were trying to do of, oh, Cedric is handsome and talented and good at things and, you know, is making Harry feel inferior a lot of the time. But, like, there's got to be a less ham-fisted way to show that.
Now, timing-wise, this was before he was cast in Twilight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Was he famous for anything else, or was it just, oh, this is Robert Pattinson, he's good-looking?
I think it was just, this is Robert Pattinson, he's good looking.
Okay. Yeah.
Which I have never really understood the Robert Pattinson thing, so. But I definitely like had a crush on Cedric Diggory when I read the book, so seeing this movie, I was a bit like, okay. I guess that's one choice. No shade at you, Robert, but I'm assuming you're listening to this.
he's a huge fan. Just in between takes at The Batman, just listening in. He just throws his phone across the room. So they change some stuff here with the Weasley family, mainly that Percy is not here, and he's there
right,
in the book.
Yeah.
And there's also no Bill or Charlie. I don't know if they went to the World Cup as well, but they're just not in the film at all, and they are in the book.
Yeah, Charlie literally never, ever shows up in the movies.
He's only in a photo of their trip to Egypt,
yes,
and that's it.
That's right.
That is the only instance of Charlie, the best Weasley, aside from Ginny and Molly. But I think it's weird that Percy isn't here because Chris Rankin, who is now my best friend after having met him at LeakyCon, he was in the first three movies.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was a scheduling thing or if they're trying to cut costs by being like, well, if Percy's really only, because he's really is only in that one scene.
Yeah.
He's not there that much because he had graduated at this point, so the only plot line that is there is that he has a falling out with the Weasley family because he gets the job and he has a disagreement. Oh, no, wait, actually, he's in the book a lot because he fills in for when Barty Crouch is absent and stuff.
That's right.
Yeah, he's actually a major portion of this book.
Yeah.
And they just wrote him out.
Yeah.
My silence should indicate that these names are flying over my head because of the movies.
Percy Weasley is the older brother of the Weasleys. He was the prefect from the first two, kind of snooty and up and tight.
Okay.
And in the book, what happens is you have Barty Crouch Sr., the guy with the Hitler mustache and the vague accent that doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, love. Yeah.
He has this whole side plot where he is quote unquote sick and he can't show up for some parts of the Triwizard Tournament. And Percy, as his executive assistant, fills in and shows up and is generally snooty. And that's a whole side plot in the film that they just completely got rid of. So I guess they just decided to have no Percy at all, because if they had him for a little bit, maybe it would be more confusing as to why they ignored this side plot, which does become really important later on in the books.
Well, I mean, that's, I think, the problem with a lot of these movies is that they're making them simultaneously with the books. And so there were things that, I think there were like battles that J.K. Rowling was like made a point to fight. Like this isn't a spoiler for the fifth movie, really, but right. Creature is a character who you first meet in the fifth book, and when they were making the fifth movie, they cut him out completely, and J.K. Rowling was like, no, you need to keep him in there, because of course he becomes really important later on. But I think that for other things, like Percy, like even though she knew that plot became important later on, I don't necessarily think that it was so vital.
Interesting.
And she couldn't, they were writing these movies with like half the information that they needed, because the books weren't done yet. And so I think that that's probably why like that kind of stuff gets cut out.
Yeah, it's almost like this book, anything that wasn't the Triwizard Tournament got nixed. It's almost like they should have just called it Harry Potter and the Triwizard Tournament. Because every side plot that exists in the book is just completely gone.
It's true.
So back to the World Cup, the first part of the movie where I was like, this is good, I like this a lot, is when they go into the tent. That's just cool. That's exactly how I envisioned it when I was reading it. And it's just Harry's confusion of how small it is. And that was really cool. And I'm sure that was a big thing for a lot of people. I remember when I was doing the Goblet of Fire episodes of Potterless, everyone was like, it was such a big thing to see that in the movie because it was so cool. So that was awesome. But of course, killed that momentum by ruining something when they actually get to the Quidditch World Cup itself. First off, you lose all of the hype for the World Cup. In the books, it's more fleshed out with walking around the village and buying merchandise, and Ron gets a little crumb action figure that is animated like a real person and stuff. But a major thing that is changed here is that in the books, the seats that they have are taken as a compliment. So because Arthur works for the ministry, he is invited to be in the minister's press box. And it's supposed to be really nice. That's where Barty Crouch Sr. is. And this character that you don't know exists, Brigand, named Ludo Bagman, who I have a storied history with, because basically in the books, he is a red herring as the bad guy.
Oh.
There's basically two red herrings, which is very interesting. So you kind of get this in the movie with Barty Crouch Sr. being a little suspect that you think he might be the bad guy. And then in the book, you have him as like an obvious red herring. And then Ludo Bagman's only kind of there a little bit, but he's in a couple of scenes and acts sketchy once or twice. So for me, for episodes of Potterless, I was fully convinced that he was the real bad guy and Barty Crouch Sr. was just this red herring. But ultimately, Ludo Bagman is just a not that important character. Whereas I thought he was intentionally being hidden so that it was this big reveal of, oh, you didn't see it coming, but I'm just stupid.
How did you feel when you realized that he wasn't in the movies at all?
I was heartbroken.
Yeah.
I was crushed. They basically just combine him and Barty Crouch Sr. together.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be like a tag team in the book, and in the movie, they smush him together. So what's weird about the way they change this is the whole interaction with the Malfoys
at
the game is different. I don't even know if that even happens in the book, really. I think they have a little back and forth.
Yeah, I think they do run into each other.
Yeah, but this whole thing of, I think what it is in the book is them being confused that they are going to a good seat.
Yeah.
Whereas in this one, it's they're dunking on them, and then the Malfoys get to be in the minister's box. But then also they're going to a lower seat, which it makes sense in Quidditch that the highest seat would be the best one, because then you can see everything, because it's all flying. So it's very strange, and it seemed I don't get what the point of it was just to further drive home. I don't know.
Yeah.
I actually really, I liked that exchange, because it further like developed the Malfoys as like posh upper class, like they have everything at this point, which like in the later movies when everything starts to crumble and he's looking like more disheveled, it made that sort of fall way more impactful for me. So like that whole, number one, I freaking loved the stadium and how it was constructed and like that really metal work. And it was just so cool. And I remember that shot where they're on the lower gangplank and sort of like talking up to them and saying they'll, you know, be the first to feel rain or whatever. And I just loved that separation that they set up. So I actually really loved that whole exchange and them being up in the nosebleeds, because there's even like a later conversation, I think, with Hagrid, where he's talking with the three of them in the woods randomly. I don't know what they were doing, but he was like, oh, you were a big bunch of misfits. And like further driving home, like them being these misfits who are lower class or middle class was something that I super enjoyed.
Yeah, I think it makes sense because there's so much of that in the books, like nearly constantly, especially since, you know, Harry doesn't really have... He grew up so poor and then gets all this money, and then his best friend is really poor, and then, you know, his rival is this like fancy guy. It's part of every single mention of Malfoy and interaction with the Malfoys. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in the movies, it makes sense to like create this one interaction to deliver that same amount of information.
Right. And classic movie Lucius. He always ends his interactions with Harry by doing something buck wild. And this time he hits Harry with a cane.
Yeah. I freaking love Jason Isaacs so much.
And he's like, enjoy the game while it lasts, or whatever he says.
Jason Isaacs is amazing. He was born for that role.
Oh my God, yes. Incredible. He does so well. What else is he in? That name is so familiar.
Well, he played Captain Hook in that 2003 Peter Pan, which I absolutely loved him in.
And he's, isn't he in The Patriot? Isn't he the bad British guy?
Yeah, he's the bad guy.
He's always like some sort of sniveling British villain, you know?
So great.
Love it. I love it. So yes, the stadium is awesome. All the effects are really cool. Cornelius Fudge ends up doing the announcement, which is Ludo Bagman does this in the books. Another thing that's really sad is that Fudge's trademark item in the books is he has a lime green bowler hat, and then in the books they make it black, you know,
so
like a normal
stupid
human. Like, objectively, such a smart decision. I'm sure the costume designer read that and was like, yeah, fuck that.
We're not doing lime green.
But as me, who wanted to see someone wear a lime green bowler hat, I was crushed. I was so sad.
That to me feels like a choice that's trying to get at the like, oh, let's make it gritty and grounded. And it's like, no, just make this whimsical fantasy movie, please. Stop trying to make everything gritty.
Yeah.
Just give him a lime green bowler hat.
Well, was he a fan of the Bulgarians or the Irish? Because that could have been, you know, the reason that they didn't want him to be a fan of the Irish.
That's
could
true. Yeah, because I guess they hadn't established Fudge really in previous movies, because it's
not
like literally every single time he's mentioned in the books, he's mentioned with his lime green bowler hat. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a thing.
Mm-hmm. That's wild.
This is a bit weird to then just like not have that for seemingly no reason.
Yeah, I mean, except for that's a bonkers clothing item to wear.
Yeah, but that's what makes it so fun.
Yeah, I think that's the whole thing, is that wizards,
his name is Cornelius Fudge. Like, come on.
The whole thing in the books is that the wizards are not supposed to understand how Muggle clothing works.
Yeah.
And starting with movie 3, they very much understand Muggle clothing. So I think that's part of the fun, is that in wizarding world, that's a normal hat to wear. And in Muggle life, no one would be caught dead.
Yeah.
But here we are. So here's something that is a little interesting before the match starts, is they do the fireworks and then the leprechauns are dancing and then the Bulgarians fly in. They get rid of this whole thing where the Bulgarians also have a mascot, where they have these things called the Vila.
Yeah.
They're these beautiful human-ish creatures that emit this aura that make people fall in love with them. And at one point,
like
in the
sirens, kind of.
Yeah. And at one point they make the ref fall in love with them. It's all thing. And then the leprechauns in the movie are just fireworks, but in the books, they're actually small individual leprechauns that spell things like the fish in Finding Nemo.
Oh, yeah.
Silverfish. Yeah.
And they hand out gold that then Ron takes and thinks is real gold, but it's leprechaun gold. So it just disappears after a certain number of hours. And there's that whole thing in the book.
Producer Brandon has a message me that you can't have green clothes on the film because of CGI with green screens. But why didn't they use blue screens, Brandon? I've seen 300.
Oh.
They use blue screens.
Also, figure it out. He needs a signature lime green bowler. I'm sorry.
Find
figure
a
something
way.
Else out. Paint CGI onto his bowler hat. Like, I don't care. Make it happen. That's me
paint
as a director
CGI,
of Harry Potter.
Very excited for when people looking back are like, yeah, Lauren Shippen, she went on to make movies. She knew so much about CGI. But here's something buck wild that happens. And I made fun of this on Twitter last night because I don't understand this. The Irish team flies in. They run the flying V, which is great, before the match starts. And then they show part of the crowd. And you know how sometimes people have those really big banners? Mm-hmm. There's an Irish one that's just this big green rectangular banner with white spray paint that just says Top of the Morning.
That's right. Yeah.
What the fuck? Like,
For real?
Is that racist? It feels racist.
The books are no secret. Like, the stereotypes happen. Hold on, I'm going to turn the laptop around. That's what it looks like, Lauren.
Good Lord.
So this banner covers about four rows of the stadium and about one, two, three, about four columns as well. I would guess that 60 people just can't see anything because of this banner that's in the way.
Top O the morning.
Top O the morning. With every first letter capitalized. And it's just really poorly done with white spray paint. Just no effort. And it's so strange that this would be something that people would bring to a game.
Yeah.
It's so strange that they would cover the view of dozens of people to show it. I hope they got rid of it before the match actually started. But then what's even more buck wild is immediately after, the Bulgarians come in, and then Crumb shows up, and then it's this thing where everyone drops individual banners, and then it turns it into like a video screen, and it's really cool. It's like, okay, we go from white spray paint sign to this. What are we doing? It was so
wild.
Also,
you're wizards. You don't need spray paint. You can do it with your wand. You have magic.
You don't need a banner. Just put it into the sky.
I gotta say, that move that Crumb does when he comes in does things to me and for me. That is the coolest freaking shot when he does that cool, like, I don't know,
broom flip,
skateboard, snowboard move, whatever it is. Yeah. It's amazing.
You and Ron Weasley both.
Yeah.
Ron is super into it in the books.
Oh my God. I love that when he's like, he's an artist. I'm like, oh, you're confused and enjoy.
Speaking of my best friends now that I was at LeakyCon, the guy who plays Victor Crumb, Stanislav Ionivsky, he was there.
Oh my God, amazing.
I didn't get to talk with him a lot, but I did compliment him on his suit because it was really nice. And also I went to the hotel gym because of his recommendation that it was really nice because he is jacked.
Oh, really?
Yeah, as you would expect. He's jacked in this movie and he's, what, 20 or whatever?
Yeah.
But he is ripped. That dude is, like, stacked.
Is he still as dreamy as he was in the movie?
Yeah, just Google image search. You'll be satisfied. Perfect. He went through some interesting long hair, long beard phases, but now he's got, like, a nice, cleaner cut look. Yeah, dude's doing well. Ooh, I hear the keyboard typing away.
Oh, I'm 100% doing that. Oh, hi. Yeah. What's up? Yeah. I'm just going to keep him on the screen as we keep on talking. So, yeah, let's continue.
That was another one that I just did not get. Like, I
He
I
looks
don't
better
see
now
it.
Than he's a bit, like, chunkier in the movie, and the hair isn't doing him any favors. Now he's like a little bit more like chiseled, and hair is more put together than just a buzz cut.
Yeah,
dude, I loved when he walks in all serious with his awesome coat and his furry hat, and I'm just like, yo.
The costume department for the Durmstrang people as a whole, and for him specifically, he always looks so fresh.
Yeah.
The entrance thing, the Yule ball, his hats, his coats. Oh,
yeah, he looks it's very great. Good.
Mm-hmm. Final thing about the Quidditch World Cup, though, is that Fudge does the announcement and says, let's the game begin, and then just shoots out some white ball, which isn't anything. It's not the snitch. It's not one of the balls. It's just the camera follows this white ball, and then it just cuts to the match being over, which I don't like Quidditch. I think it makes sense. But what's so strange is there's so much hype. There is so much hype.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the teams. Here's these fireworks. Here's Crumb. All this stuff. Let's go. We're at the match. The kids are excited. Here we go. Wow. Wasn't that fun? Like, what?
Because I think if it hadn't been for the thing that happens after the match, they would have cut out this entire sequence. It would have gone from that first scene to Hogwarts.
I agree. Yeah.
Because it's just... Other than the Death Eater stuff that then comes, like, this is doing nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like, it establishes who Crumb is, but you could do that in, like, a quick scene of dialogue, basically. Like, you could have Ron and Harry just telling Hermione at breakfast at Hogwarts about the Quidditch World Cup, but because they have this whole thing with the Death Eaters, you need this scene. But, like, I feel a lot for the filmmakers because it, like, doesn't do anything.
I gotta say, coming back to this movie, the thing that I discovered that I actually really, really respect, just from, like, a film geek standpoint, is the transitions in this movie are, to me, so impactful and so interesting because, like, you're immediately cutting to Ron gushing about him, and he's able to sort of, like, wax poetic about it, and you get excited. But remember, there's, like, a later scene, forgetting something, like, triggers Harry or some romantic thing sort of happens, and then it cuts immediately to him, like, laying on a couch with the gold egg on his chest. And it's like, you don't have to show everything, and it just jumps to, like, the impact of it. So, like, purely for, like, how they... I don't know how much they take out of the book, which it sounds like they did a lot. But in terms of like really moving it along and like getting to the emotional points of it, I actually was really impressed. I want to give the movie a little more credit than I have in the past just for that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think out of all of the books, this is the one that's sort of the most impossible to adapt because it's not a cohesive book.
Mm-hmm. It's chunky.
It's chunky. And there's usually like an arc to the books. You know, if you start at the school year and you end at the end of the school year, and then this stuff, it's all leading up to something, and there's like a character growth and an arc. And this is really choppy as a book because of the Triwizard Tournament, mm-hmm. that it really would work well as like a series of, as like a HBO miniseries.
Yeah,
this
one would be the best as TV, especially if they bring it in. Because what ends up happening for the movie is that they just focus on the Triwizard Tournament. In the books, these Triwizard Tournament events are spread out across the year.
Yeah.
And there's basically Triwizard section and school section. And pretty much the movie just got rid of all of the school section and all of the side plots associated with that. So I think that this one really does lose a lot. But I agree with you, Bergen. I think that they really keep it chugging along smoothly.
Yeah.
I think if you look about it and think about things it a little more intensely, it doesn't make sense. Like by the whole time it's the end of the year and you're like, wait, they didn't go to class once.
Yeah.
if you kind of peek behind the curtain, you're like, hold on. Like how many days have passed between these tasks? Because it seems like the way that they do it, this is over the course of 3 days, but it's an entire year. So you have to kind of forget some of the logistics of it, but they do really keep things going and they don't lose the momentum, which I think is hard because in the book, it really does feel like here's the chapter about this, and here's the chapter about this. And
it's very episodic as a book, which is weird, which like doesn't translate well to film. So I understand why they focus just on the Triwizard Tournament, because that's the thing you need to do in this book, mm-hmm. and they couldn't make a 12-hour movie,
right? Mm-hmm. But it'll be good when they make the HBO series.
Inevitably,
And then cast me as Ludo Bagman, please. That's what I want.
Like, do you think they will?
Oh, they're definitely going to make a TV show.
Oh, my God.
Daniel Radcliffe has been asked about it before, and he's like, no, please don't. That's a bad idea.
They're going to
do it.
Harry Potter seems like one of those movies that, like, you can do, you know how like The Wizard of Oz, it would, like to me, I'm like, why would you ever remake that sort of quintessential movie? But everyone does offshoots of it, like different sort of twists. I feel like they would do that for Harry Potter. It feels so like weirdly sacrilegious to make another one.
I mean, think about, they're making an Amazon Lord of the Rings show, and those movies are literally perfect.
Yeah. And also 87 hours long each.
Yes, and they're not, like, I haven't read all the books, I've only read The Hobbit and, like, the beginning of Fellowship, but they seem like diehard Lord of the Rings fans love them, and then also they just work on a movie level, like, they're just good movies, yet they're still making a TV show of Lord of the Rings, so it's I don't think anybody cares, people just want money, you know?
I think with Harry Potter, they're gonna try to flesh out the world as much as they can with things like Fantastic Beasts, Cursed Child, all this other stuff, and then I don't think it'll be for a while, it might be like 10, 15 years from now, but they will do
They'll do it.
Wow.
And I think it'll be fine, and maybe they'll do fun things like Daniel Radcliffe now plays James Potter or something, his dad. So I think they'll do it once they run out of stuff to do. I think they'll milk it for all it's worth, and then they'll be like,
and now
TV show, guys.
Yeah, it'll be on Disney Plus when Disney buys Warner Brothers and everything that Warner Brothers owns.
Oh my gosh, yeah. We're either going to be completely taken over by Disney or Amazon, one of the two. For people listening in the year 2080, you know, we didn't have prime ruler lord Jeff Bezos.
We were still Americans, not Amazon Prime citizens.
Yeah, I definitely made that joke on the podcast before. It's going to happen, though.
Yeah,
it's going to be so strange. Yeah, my kids listening to this like, what? What's Whole Foods? We just call it Prime Food. Well, now that we've ruined the chance of any Amazon product sponsoring the show, we might as well take a break to some non-Amazon products that are sponsoring this episode in Wingardium Adridosa. Today's episode of Potterless is brought to you by Ethos. Let's say hypothetically that you are a 14-year-old boy that gets entered into a life-threatening competition of which you're too young to compete in. There's a very good chance you're going to die, and you're afraid that your life is in danger. So what should you do in preparation for this tournament? You should get life insurance with Ethos Life. This is the most on-brand sponsorship for this episode possible, and I'm so stoked about it. Ethos is a faster, easier, and more affordable way to get life insurance to make sure that your family is taken care of, even if you're not around to take care of them because you died in the Triwizard Tournament.
Ethos understands that everybody's going to have a different plan that makes the most sense for them, but they're committed to finding the best plan for you. And you can find that plan from the comfort of your computer, tablet, your phone, and it takes 10 minutes or less. All you have to do is answer a few questions about things like your health, your age, your income, things that you know the answer to, and you'll get an instant estimate. Then you can finish your application afterwards, and it just takes minutes. And of course, everybody's going to be different. Mine is going to look different from yours, which will look different from Harry's, different from Seamus Finnegan's. But an example from Ethos is that a healthy 35-year-old can get $1 million of coverage for only $50 a month. And that's way more money than you would get by winning the TriResort tournament, so makes a lot of sense to sign up for Ethos here. With Ethos, you can rest easy knowing the people that you love will be taken care of, confusing terms, and piles of paperwork not included. And as a Potterless listener, you can go to ethoslife.com/potterless and click on Check My Price to get started today. Again, that's ethoslife.com/potterless. Click Check My Price and you'll get your fully personalized quote. So again, ethoslife.com/potterless. Get your fully personalized quote and make sure that you're set up and your family's set up, because who knows if you're making it out of this tournament today. And now you'll hear words from a few sponsors who make it feasible for me to be a full-time podcaster. Some of these ads will be read by me, others of them won't. The ones that aren't are inserted locally, so if you live internationally, don't be surprised if you hear an ad in your country's native language. And once those ads are complete, we'll get back to this episode of Potterless.
This episode of Potterless is brought to you by Arena Club. Now, if you listen to this podcast, it should be no secret that I am both a sports nerd and more of a traditional nerd. And when you think of these two types of nerddom, there's one thing that links them together, and that is card collecting. Whether you are looking to buy, trade, sell, or display a card collection of sports cards or Pokemon cards, you should check out Arena Club. ArenaClub.com is the place where you can do all of these things. I have recently made a purchase on the marketplace. I got Lieutenant Surge's Raichu, which is my favorite Pokemon, and I didn't even know that there was a Lieutenant Surge version of the Raichu. So that is a card that I now have, and it's not just some digital thing. I can have this card physically mailed to me. So there's bunch of cool stuff you can do with Arena Club, including their slab packs. If you have ever done any sort of card collecting, you know that ripping packs or repacks can be a zero transparency type of thing where you're just hoping you get some sort of cool card. But what's nice about the slab packs with Arena Club is that you have full transparency. You see what available cards are there, what your percentage of getting them is, what the gradings are. So it is not a complete black box. You're going into this knowing what cards you might get. And I've been using Arena Club and it's pretty cool. It's very easy for me to look up different cards. I can favorite them, see what I want, and then whenever I want them shipped to me, I can get them shipped to me, and then I'll have the physical versions of them. Right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/potterless. Wow, that is a wild offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack is $40 right there. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/potterless for 10% off your first purchase.
That's a wild offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack is $40
more transparent way. Whether you're a sports nerd or a Pokemon nerd or all sorts of nerds like me, you can use Arena Club today.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So the Death Eaters come in after the World Cup and they change some stuff, but they kind of keep the overall vibe. The Death Eaters, which are pretty much an allegory for the KKK, really hit that hard in this one with the pointy hats.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Which part yikes, but also I guess that's the point. They're just really hitting you over the head with like, hey, these guys are racist. But something they change is that Harry gets kneed in the head and then just knocked out and then wakes up and everything is burnt. Everything.
Yeah.
These are wizards with wands that know how to do spells to extinguish fire, but just everything is completely destroyed. And also, no one found Harry? They come back, it's like, we've been looking all over for you, Harry. It's like, no one else is there. It is a ghost town except for Harry on the ground, and then he wakes up. It just felt very implausible.
Well, yeah.
When they were like yelled to go to the port key, that actually raised a question to me. Like, when they like arrived there, did they just leave the boot in the field and then they just go to it? Like, can anyone use the port key?
It's a whole point of discussion with port keys because
port keys are a whole thing.
They change, but for the most part, port keys usually are an item and then they're set for a certain time. Mm-hmm. And then after a certain time, they go away. So what you could have is that they had the shoe port key, and then after they used it, it disappeared or is just a regular shoe now. And then maybe they had a port key set for when the match was supposed to end. But yeah. I don't think it would have made that much sense, because realistically, they would have been leaving the next morning. So this is sparked a whole, it's a whole Harry Potter thing.
And also, like, they set up the tent, and they, like, there's that whole discussion in the book about how matches can sometimes last for months. Right. Like there was, like, Ron talks about one World Cup where, like,
it goes,
you know,
5 days, and then Harry is like, I would love that. And Percy goes, I would hate that. And it's one of the few times I've agreed with Percy on anything.
Yeah. Port keys are kind of messily explained in Harry Potter. And I don't think they really come back in the movies at all.
Do they do it in the seventh movie when they're doing the Seven Potters? Because it's in the book, at least. I'm not sure.
Oh.
I feel like they don't do it in the movie, but it is in the book.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because they use, like, a hairbrush and some other stuff. Because they go to all the different ounces. I don't think
they kind of skip that bit.
They just show up at the Burrow.
Yeah.
So everything is burnt. And then the other thing that they change is Barty Crouch Jr., the character that is played by David Tennant, he is just not in the book until one little scene, and then the whole big reveal is that he's been doing stuff the whole time.
Yeah.
In the movie, they kind of hint that he is the bad guy, and then instead of the reveal being that he is actually still alive, in the book they tell you he's dead.
Yeah.
The reveal just ends up being that he's been using Polyjuice Potion. You see him in that intro scene. You see him in the World Cup. I guess part of it is to make things a little more clear, but also part of it is like, well, we've got David Tennant, so let's put him in more of the movie.
Yeah, I think, well, I'm sure that the filmmakers also thought, and David Tennant probably also thought, like, oh, well, this guy is definitely going to come back. He's definitely going to be in the future books, you know, so we should cast David Tennant. Like, I'm convinced that they thought that. Also, I get why they have him appear early on in the movie, because I think it would be like a really, really random reveal where if it was just like, oh, now there's this random guy all of a sudden.
Right.
So I think that was a good choice on the filmmaker's part.
Yeah. So because of that, they have to change a whole lot of things in the movie. So Brigham, in the book, what ends up happening is that the Dark Mark is cast in the sky, but you don't know who did it. And then you find out that it was made with Harry's wand because it got stolen at the World Cup match.
Damn.
The person that did it is a house elf. So like Dobby or Creature, one of those beings. It's this character named Winky who just doesn't exist in the movies at all.
Yeah.
And she is the house elf, the servant of Barty Crouch Sr. So then it's this whole confusion of like, how did she get the wand? How did she cast the spell? All this other stuff. And that becomes a whole nother side plot point. There's a whole house elf thing where Hermione is trying to fight for the rights of house elves.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's,
she's
again,
like a union, basically.
Yeah, she's trying to start a union. And that whole side plot is just completely nixed. Dobby is in the fourth book and he's just not in this movie at all.
Yeah.
There's a whole thing where Winky becomes an alcoholic and Dobby cares for her. It's the beginning of Dobby not sucking like he did in the earlier installments of the franchise. So there's just so much side plot stuff that they ended up cutting. So I guess that's part of the reason why you have Barty Crouch Jr. being a bigger thing.
I would pay major money to see like Emma Watson and a bunch of these house elves doing like a Newsies style song and dance number to unionize. I need that.
I think we all do.
That would be amazing.
So one other note that I just want to say, a lot of the hair is very interesting.
Oh, brother.
You've got Harry's hair is really big, and from scene to scene, it varies. In some scenes, it looks good, and in some scenes, it looks rough.
Oh, it's like feathered and flat iron.
Yeah.
And I guess this movie came out in 2005, so as someone that starting in 2004 got a bowl cut, I get it.
Yeah.
Because that was the hairstyle of people that were teenagers at the time, so I get it. But Harry's hair looks pretty rough. Ron's hair looks super rough.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
It's just in between being short and long, and it's wavy, and it just is very strange. But then also, Barty Crouch Sr. just has a Hitler mustache, and we're just cool with it? I know it's not as intense, but it is not wide enough to be a mustache.
Yeah, it's very weird.
And then also just the way in which he talks, I don't know if this actor is famous. Apologies if the guy that plays him is a big deal or whatever. But he sounds like he's caught between England and France.
Yeah.
He just talks in this weird half English, half French, like, oh, a Barty Crouch Jr. It's very strange.
It seems like he's supposed to be kind of like timid or something. Because I mean, Barty Crouch is kind of like a squirrely, weird person.
Right.
So I think that he was maybe trying to do that and it just came out very confused.
It was strange. Very, very strange.
Yeah.
So the World Cup ends, and then they just go to school, and then they're just at school, and then right away, the Beauxbatons are here! Like, it is right away.
It's so immediate.
In the book, it's a whole lot different because they have the scenes of them going to King's Cross. Charlie Weasley, the older brother, hints that there's something cool happening at the school, and he's not allowed to talk about it. He basically breaks his NDA in the cool way and does a friend DA with his family. He's like, because they're like, oh, Charlie, we'll see you later. He's like, actually, you'll see me in like a month or so, but...
I can't tell you why,
but I'll be there. And there's more buildup to that. And then the whole Triers or Tournament thing doesn't start until Halloween. So they're in school for 2 months or so.
Yeah.
For the movie, it's just, hey, you're at school. Here's these other people.
Yeah.
Forget about school. We're going to do a death match.
Yeah, no classes this year. We're just going to watch 4 people compete the whole time. And we're just going to deal with drama and learn how to dance instead. But yeah, it just hits you right in the face with, we're at school. Other people are here too. Ah!
Yeah.
So the first thing that happens is they have the chariot flying in and you have Hagrid doing air traffic control, which is great. And it's something that I've noticed. Is Robbie Coltrane, the guy who plays Hagrid, is he a big deal? Because they kind of shoehorn him into a lot of scenes in the movies.
Robbie Coltrane's a big actor for sure.
Okay.
Wait, before
big
Harry
as in good at acting and not just he
played,
plays Hagrid.
My Bond fans coming out, but he was in the Bond movies in the 90s.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they just, it seems to be a common theme throughout the films is to get more Hagrid in the mix, which I don't complain with. I'm not complaining about it at all.
I think it's also just that Hagrid is very much a fan favorite, right? He is, he and McGonagall are like the only good adults at Hogwarts, basically.
Yeah, even Dumbledore doesn't end his reign too well.
No.
So... Yeah, I get it. It's just they bring him in a little bit more. I'm glad that they put more Hagrid in the mix because one of the side plots that gets cut is Hagrid's continual struggles with being the Care of Magical Creatures professor.
Yeah.
There's this whole thing where he is nursing these creatures called the Blast-Ended Scroots, these characters are wild, and reading them, I love them. They're these things that start off about the size of bugs, and they eventually grow to be 10 feet long, and they have a male and female blast-ended scroot, and the females have suckers, and the males have stingers, which is like a little too on the nose. But also, as their name suggests, sporadically, they just explode from their butt and then just like launch out fire and send themselves flying. And throughout the books, they start really small, and then they get bigger and bigger, and the students have to keep dealing with them, and students get hurt. And then eventually, the blast-ended scroots are one of the obstacles to overcome in the maze portion of the Triwizard Tournament. And then you learn why Hagrid has been dealing and really struggling with these creatures for the whole year.
Yeah, they're like huge silverfish crossed with scorpions. They're awful.
I would say Google it if you want, but very recently they made an official artist's rendition that was JK approved and put on Pottermore. Yeah, it's nightmare fuel. You have been forewarned.
Oh,
they are actually also in, and I think this is probably why they did it, is that there is a blast-ended scroot in the new Hagrid ride at Universal.
Oh.
I won't say when or where because there's some fun like plot twists in that ride.
Mm-hmm.
But the blast-ended scroots make an appearance, so I think that before they made them, they made this artist rendition, and they are terrifying.
Oh, my
awful.
God.
I hate them.
When I read the book, I was like, these seem fun. I just imagined them being like big roly-polies, but no, they're scary as hell.
They're really, really terrifying.
Not fun. So
absolutely. Not.
I did a quick 180 of when I was doing the episodes. I was like, yeah, my favorite's the blast-ended scroots. And I would make it a joke. And when I would do bios for conventions, I'd be like, you know, Mike's favorite character, the blast-ended scroots or whatever. Not anymore. Big nope for me. Terrifying.
Oh my God.
So yeah, that's a whole side plot that they just have to nix. So I'm glad that they add some more Hagrid stuff and they really flesh out the him and Maxime love story because that's so fun. So
it's
I'm glad
so
that
sweet.
That gets its full play.
Well, Richard Griffith, who played Dursley, and I'm forgetting her name, plays this character, but they were in History Boys together.
Yeah.
And I remember having seen that before I saw this movie and getting super excited. I'm like, oh, they're in the same universe. And that was like a bummer moment that the Dursleys don't show up in this movie.
Not at all. I just wanted
the History Boys connection.
Yeah. I forgot that she was in the History Boys. She's the other teacher.
Yeah.
Because she is genuinely tall. She's not as tall as the guy who plays Hagrid. But I mean, they had to put them both in like platform shoes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But
I did watch a behind-the-scenes video, and it did confirm that Madame Maxime is supposed to be 10 feet tall, and Hagrid is 8 foot 6.
Wow.
Damn. So they do some stuff there, putting it in perspective. But yeah, Robbie Coltrane was talking about that in my little behind the scenes YouTube video I was watching.
I don't think I realized she was supposed to be 10 foot
tall. So like the fact that she's tall, like I remember, was it Finnegan who says it? Wait, is that his last name, Finnegan?
Seamus Finnegan.
That's a large woman. And it's like during that part where all the girls come out and none of the Hogwarts girls are applauding and all the boys are losing their mind. And then like it was such a weird moment of like, okay, boys and girls, sexualization, like the girls love the boys coming down, the boys love the girls coming down. It was so strange.
I despise that scene so much. The entrance of Bobaton and Durmstrang, because it's they just were like, oh well, you know, the French school that's got a headmistress is just going to be ladies and it's going to be very soft and they're sighing and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, from Eastern Europe, it's going to be masculinity. And it's like, no, in the books, the boys do like drool over Fleur, but that's because she's part Vila.
Yeah, so the same being that was the mascots for Durmstrang that make people fall in love with them. Hey, editing Mike here. Past Mike definitely meant the mascots for Bulgaria. It's just kind of hard because they wear red, Durmstrang wears red, Crumb is on the Bulgarian team, Crumb goes to Durmstrang. Give him a break. Cut him some slack. Fleur, the one that becomes the champion, she is part Vila. So it's not that people fawn over all the girls. It's just they fawn over her and they don't understand why. And that's something later on in the movie that they get to is when Ron is like, I don't know why I asked her. I don't know what came over me. And the movie doesn't make any sense because they never talk about her being part Vila.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I guess she's super hot and that's supposed to be the explanation.
Oh my God. Yeah, but that makes sense.
They're really big on the boys and girls like puberty coming of age thing, and even watching the behind the scenes videos that I was doing, it's all about that. It's all just, and they keep talking about it where it's a little too uncomfortable, where the directors or the writers at the screeners ever just like, yeah, like puberty and sexualization and having feelings for the opposite sex. And they keep saying like that direct phrase of developing feelings for the opposite sex a lot in a 10-minute YouTube video that I was like, okay.
Well, it's also kind of, I watched it with James and my husband, and we were talking about the age differences in this, and like to be able to participate in this, they say you have to be over 17. So like, I'm jumping a little ahead, but like the whole Crumb Hermione thing where we established that she's like 14?
She's actually a year older. She was had an early birthday.
Okay. Born in September.
Yeah, so she is, she's 15, which still not ideal.
Because in my mind, I'm like, that's like a senior dating an eighth grader, and I was struggling with that a little bit.
Yes. Yeah, it's not ideal. She is supposed to be older, and it's 17, 15, which I know it's like 2 years, but it's more of, especially with the way the school works, 17 is when people are seniors, or their last and seventh year of the school. And it's also they are considered adults in the wizarding world. Yeah. 17 is basically our 18. So you have, even though it's a 2 year difference, you do have an adult and a minor.
Yeah.
And it's not great. And then in the book, I don't know if it happens in the movie. I think in the movie, they just like are going to be pen pals or whatever. In the book, he invites her to his house over the summer in Romania or in Bulgaria. And that's a bit much.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Well, and I don't think of this book as the book where it's like sexual awakening and puberty. Like that's the sixth book has a lot of that kind of stuff.
I've always thought Half-Blood was that. Yeah.
Yeah. Half-Blood is definitely that. This to me feels more like Harry, Ron, and Hermione are realizing that there are people outside of the three of them. Like, that's what it feels like, right? Of Ron kind of being taken by Fleur, and Hermione realizing that she actually, that there are people that want to get to know her that aren't just her friends, right? Like, it's kind of her being finally realizing that, like, she has value to other people. She doesn't always have to be, like, the weird, maligned nerd. And then Harry getting a crush on Cho, but the way that it's framed in the book, his crush on Cho is very much just him being jealous of Cedric.
Yeah.
Like, it's not really about Cho, right? It's about him wanting to be Cedric.
It's part that, and then also part Harry just being very confused and very high school boy of just, he thinks she's pretty and that's all that matters. Like, doesn't care about personality, doesn't like her, doesn't think she's funny. It's just like, she's hot, which as someone that was 14, I get it, because that was my criteria when I was in seventh grade was, she's pretty and she will say yes if I ask her out.
Too, which for Harry is a big thing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Good at sports and hot. Check, all Harry cares about.
But it's not none of those things are really that big of a deal in the fourth book. Like, they're mentioned, but they're not really. And like Harry asking Cho to the prom, or you know, to the prom, to the Yule Ball, and then being rejected is like a thing that happens, but like, it's not that big of a deal versus right. in the sixth book, like Ron and Hermione dancing around each other and mm-hmm. Harry really like wanting Ginny, like all that stuff is much, much bigger in the sixth book.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was more of just because they've cut all these other side plots, they needed something else to not just be the Triwizard. So they took something that I think was probably one of the more minor side plots and then flush it out more and then just really made this all about like boys like girls now and girls like boys. And here we are and it's 2005.
Yeah. And here's the three schools. It's girls versus boys versus co-ed.
Both.
It's like, it's so dumb. I hate it.
So yeah, the other intro. So we had the chariot fly in with Beauxbatons. And then Durmstrang has the boat out of the water. And they were just really trying to flex with the CGI here.
Yeah.
There's all this music and the boat comes out and there's water and all this other stuff. So then they go to the actual feast where they're welcoming him in. And I know this is the new Dumbledore actor and he gets a lot of crap in this movie for screaming the Harry, did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire line, which is supposed to be said calmly in the books.
Harry
but
Potter!
He just sounds so angry every time he speaks.
Yeah.
Like, even at the opening feast, he's like, we have no students to welcome to Hogwarts. It's like, why are you angry?
Like, dude, just chill out.
Yeah, you're supposed to be like, hello, everyone. We have these wonderful guests coming. And he's just like, Durmstrang from the north. It's like, all right, dog, chill. Fuck. He's so angry for everything. So he first welcomes the Beauxbatons. And yes, it's only girls, which is a bummer because they send girls and boys in the book, which I think is more interesting.
Well, it's way more interesting too, because then Fleur gets chosen.
Yeah.
There's only one female champion, and it's in the movie now it's framed as there's one female champion because she came from an all-girls school
mm-hmm.
versus like actually being worthy in a co-ed context.
Man, I hate it. That sucks.
I hate it so much.
And then, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it, I feel like in the book, Durmstrang only sent dudes.
No, there definitely are.
There are
girls from Durmstrang too.
I feel
I'm
like
pretty
maybe
sure.
It's something, well, because they had to send both because they still had to go to classes.
Right.
Maybe it was something like only dudes from Durmstrang put their name in the goblet or something.
I think Victor just got it. I think a bunch, because I feel like I remember a girl from Durmstrang, like, because they all watch people putting their names in.
So the Beauxbatons come in and it's only the girls and they're doing the whole like walk up and then which is a bit much after the after the third time they do it. I was like, all right, this is a bit much.
So unnecessarily sexual and gross.
And then butterflies fly out. But no, talking about unnecessarily sexual and gross, in between two of the sighs, there is a shot of just the girls' butts. Just their butts
running
and
forward.
Running like prancing forward. It's like, not even running, but it just shows their butts. That is it. And then someone on the side, I don't know if it's Ron or Seamus or someone else, someone off camera just on the side goes, bloody hell. Like right after they cut to the butts, it's like, really?
Really? We're doing this?
This is a children's movie. What are we doing? Like that is not aged well at all. And then immediately after, as they're walking down, you've got Maxime and then Seamus hits Ron in the back and goes, hey, Ron, that's one big woman. Like, yeah, dude.
Yeah, she's tall.
Cool. Like, ugh. Not great, which I get. It's a teenage boy thing, so it's like not like out of character, but it's still
gross.
Well,
and also like they're trying to point out that like maybe she's part giant because that's a whole thing, right? But like it's just done so
he
sloppily.
Says it with such a shit-eating grin, though.
Yeah.
It's so like, she's
look at
tall.
Her. She's big.
It's like, dude, you're Seamus Finnegan. Your whole bit is that you're bad at magic and everything blows up literally in your face. So something that I forgot that I didn't realize was in the movie. In Universal Studios, they have a performance of this entrance, which is actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
You've got the Durmstrang people, and they actually do gymnastics and the batons and all this stuff. And the Beauxbatons girls do acrobatics and all kind of dance moves and all that. And they have someone that does gymnastics, and she's in a full unitard, and it's made to look like butterflies.
Yeah.
And what I thought was, oh, right, because in the movie there's butterflies flying out when they do the sighs and all this other stuff. But they actually do have a gymnast person in the movie, and I totally forgot that was a thing.
They do, and it's like Fleur's younger sister, right? That's supposed to be the thing.
Oh, I didn't realize that was her.
Which, like, also feels like it doesn't really make sense because the whole thing is that like they've like basically fly Fleur's younger sister in so that she can be a victim in the second challenge.
Yeah, because she's not old enough to even put her name in the ring.
I'm pretty sure she's I don't think she's even in school yet. That's what's so weird about her being the
she's
gymnast.
Like,
she's like 9 years old. She's not actually at Beauband yet.
But
I have several bones to pick.
I was very excited to see person in full unitard doing back handsprings because I thought that was just a representation of butterflies, but is actually in the movie too.
Yeah.
But, and I gotta say, the movie unitard better than the Universal Studios unitard because it had fringe and texture
cool.
to it. It was pretty sweet. So yeah, it's hard because they do over sexualize it, but then at the same time, having a person doing gymnastics is dope.
Oh yeah, that's dope as hell. But, and like the sparks on the Durmstrang things, like there's cool elements of it, but it's just like, but just have like also like boys in, you know, frilly blue costumes and you know, girls in heavy red coats and all that kind of stuff. Like just mix it up. It really just bothered me that they made Fleur the only female champion basically by default.
Right. It kind of sucks that you lose out on her earning the spot.
Exactly.
And not just being like, well, they needed a girl because it was only girls.
Yeah.
So the final thing that we'll talk about in this episode, I ended on a happy note, is when the Durmstrang dudes come in, they're all like, like stomping the ground and sparks and the motion blur effects when they're spinning the batons.
Yes.
But then just the entrance of Viktor Krum and Igor Karkaroff is so good.
It's amazing.
Oh, just like so great.
Because the hallway's long enough where he has to walk pretty quickly, but he looks so intimidating and his jacket is dope and his hat
amazing.
Is dope. And when you think about it, it has not been established that he's going to be the champion yet.
Yeah.
But they all
but
know.
They know.
Oh, for
they
sure.
Know.
It's just, it's got to be weird to be the other Durmstrang people. Like, you are very much his henchman.
Yes.
It's very much Viktor Krum and friends. And it's, oh, man.
Well, I love it too, because once you have the context of knowing who Viktor Krum is, the fact that he's kind of this, like, soft, awkward boy who like doesn't really know what to do with being famous.
You
it's
lose
like
that whole thing.
Him being like sort of frowny and marching down, you're sort of like, oh, you feel awkward. Like, I don't know. I think that like
I love
that like contrast.
Put that in
of,
the
of
film.
Him.
That sounds
yeah,
cool.
So in the book, this is something, and eventually when I talk to my new best friend Stanislav Ionevsky about it, in the books, Viktor Krum is awkward.
Yeah.
He's not buff. He's a lanky dude. He just happens to be really good at Quidditch. He's not that physically intimidating.
Yeah.
And he's actually a really complex character because he is very famous, world famous.
Yeah.
He's 17 years old and is the best player on the national team. It'd be like Pulisic on the American soccer team.
Of course, yeah. That
yes,
guy.
Yes.
Now he's in his early to mid-20s, but he's for a while he was 18 and was still the best soccer player in America.
Yeah.
So he had this awkward thing of, dude, can't even buy a drink, and we're putting the entire weight of our soccer department on this dude's shoulders. So Viktor Krum is world famous, and he shows up to this tournament and is still kind of awkward, and eventually gets to the point where he asks Hermione, who is not super popular, to the Yule Ball. And it's this whole thing. Hermione talks about it in the movie a little bit, says he just watches me study, but uses it as a way to justify him not being talkative and as opposed to being awkward, because in the books, the whole plot is that he doesn't have the courage to ask Hermione out. So he keeps just hanging out in the library
while
these girls fawn over him.
Yeah.
But he doesn't want them. He's interested in Hermione because he finds her interesting.
Yeah, and he like ends up writing her letters over the summer and stuff. Like, he's a really
sweet guy.
That's
so nice.
And it's really cool because he's a world famous athlete. There's people literally following him across the school, which happens in the movie, does happen in the book.
Yep.
He could just pick hottest girl that is following me, but he's more complex and has more things going on where he's not just muscle bob buff pants. He's not just this meathead. And in the movies, they're just like, I mean, it kind of made, I don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg, but they cast this ripped dude. And not that Stan is not, like, he's so nice, like him, the human, but they just decide, yep, we're just going to make this dude a pure meathead. And that's it. Because he's a boy.
So interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
I would have loved to have seen that.
I know.
I feel like the actor
Stanislav Ionevsky.
Stanislav Ionevsky does like, I could tell that he knew that about Viktor Krum. You know, it felt like he'd read the books and had like made an effort to like find those moments of sensitivity. Cause it's like when the few scenes that, you know, like little moments where you see him and Hermione, he's not being sort of a big meatheady guy. He's like kind of like, you
charming.
Know, like, like quietly talking to her and stuff. And so
he's great. And just so you guys know, as we've been talking, I've just been sending Lauren over the chat pictures of present day Krum. So enjoy those. So I really
I look forward to it.
Yeah.
But I did overhear a little bit of one of his programs at LeakyCon where they were interviewing him about it. And yeah, you totally get that vibe. They cut a big scene of him dancing with Hermione. That was a whole thing in Yule Ball. Okay. And that gave a little more insight of the him actually liking her and not just being a meathead. The vibe that I got is that Stan has a little bit of, not regret, but he is sad that you lose some of that. Because I think you're right. He read the books. He went into it. He tried to figure out Crumb as a character. And then what you get in the movie is just, oh, I'm Victor Crumb.
Yeah.
Which,
good at Quidditch.
Yeah, it's just not who he is. It makes me sad. Yeah. But on the happy note that we're going to end on, his outfit is dope. So
fresh
yay,
as hell.
Yay, Victor. You look good. So we're gonna put the pause on it here. You guys will be discussing the rest of the film in the next part. But as we round out this one, just because it is like over an hour.
Oh, boy.
Not even like halfway through the movie. If people want to find the two of you doing stuff, where can they do it? I know, Lauren, you wrote a freaking book.
I did write a book.
So if you want to tell
a meathead who falls in love with a nerd. I wrote a book called The Infinite Noise. It's a supernatural YA romance, queer romance. And you can follow me at Lauren Shippen and at Atypical Artists on Twitter.
What about you, Brigan?
I am a person that exists in the world, and you can find me at Brigan Snow on Twitter, and usually walking behind Lauren carrying a bag of some sort. So, yeah.
Nice. Love to hear it. Well, thank you guys so much for joining on, and listeners, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, as they say in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, before they make butterflies fly out of their jackets and go, a wizard on.
Did you skip the intro of last episode of Potterless? Because we have new merchandise items and they are fantastic. We've got So Good the Worst buttons. We have Violently Purple V-necks and Violently Purple crewnecks, as well as a whole bunch of stuff from all the other Multitude shows. If you go to multitude.production/merch, you can see all of the wonderful merchandise that we have to offer. Potterless is created by Mick Schubert. It is hosted by Mick Schubert. It is edited by Mick Schubert. It is produced by Mick Schubert, as well as Vicky Garcia, Aaron Johnson, Jesse Horgan, Natalie Klobuchar, Klauser, Lopu, Frank Chiodo, Marchismo, Samantha Rose, Juan Sanfilio, Abita Med, Rosemary Dodge, Maria Lisa C. Keen, Romina Rivadeneira, Camille Doc, Audra, Eleanor Curlin, Rossanne Batamana, Nikita Power, Taylor Armstead, Ali Madsen, Amelia Krauss, Sarah Nink, Ben Silver, Rachel Guthrie, Zachary Pulido, Orca Gore, Vivian the Owl, Takari Arant, Haley Hastings, Moster, Angelina Withred, Caitlin Sullivan, Grace Riggles, Arul Pineda, Inga Nodstadter, Mari Wynn, Alex Consilver, John Cocker, Noel Basile, Tao, Emily Tyrell, Robin Fernandez, Will Barrington, Liz Bigelow, Brandon Pickens, Sarah Enslin, Claire Spencer, Rory Collier, Gloria Gillen, AliCat29, Veronica Vartova, Lotta Bartova, Noah, Tracy Toya, Colleen, Jennifer Markley, Friday, Jay Svensson, Ivor Peterson, Naomi Guglielmo, Tyler Latshaw, Summer Rathel, Heather Fleischman, Vera Culletham, Carrie D. Bagason, Andrea Kroc, Lisa Grieven, Lynn Walker, Cameron Watkins, Justin Montero, Christine Saunders, Jacob Parrish, Toothless Walnut, Maya Gray, Mark Boddy, Polly Burge, Netta Ottoboni, Remy Fontaine, Sarah Shecker, Nona VM, Zina Rosnowski, Harlan Haskins, Noelia Eddie, Brian, Jenny Campion, Nikki Harris, Cara Hamilton, Courtney Hemwood, Kine, Amanda Alfred, Sabrina, Alicia McLaren, Kafir Shaltiel, Lindy Plackey, Martha Medueno, Benjamin Desmond, Sarah Shetter, Marta Morrison, Stephanie Magnuson, Justine Wade, Aaron Richter, CJ Ochoco, Eileen Gazesh, Violet Sullivan, Kat Yowell, Lindsay Towning, Fielding Lee, Keegan Curran, Miranda Manning, Gail Ann, Mr. Folk, Adam Bryant, Christine Welton, Maya, Zachary Davis, Kieran Heaven, Christy, Lily Leader Williams, Wire Warrior 4976, Floor Sake, Sierra Skiarsford, Georgia, Itzel Aime Ayala, Peter Wyckoff, Candy Kane, Skylar Lily, Ed O'Ryan, Professor Threat, Kelsey Ulesian, Ellie Huskovchova, Lubin Maleo, Akinwande, Lena Karen, Daniel Fulkerson, Lee Lili, Elizabeth Christofferson, Abby, Luca Faccio, Michael David Yordi, Nice Earmuffs Potter, Did Your Mum Make Them For You? Cara Hoyer, Tiffany Cottrell, Kelly Otilio, Nadia Vansgard, Carrie Crumpler, Jamie Kingston, Camilo Garcia, Connie Bienkowski, Mary Mateel, Imo Sarah, Jennifer Wendt, Anastasia Blake, Jaden Allman, Nedry OS, Matt Barger, Riley Lane, Will Huser, Zephyr Lawrence, Brett Clausen, Samantha Lentz, Kayla M. Simino, Lauren Wainwright, Aurora Fruhoff, Emma Clark, Hermione Snape, Megan Dick, Out of Context 69, Liam McCormick, Milena Brandle, Marco Cepeda, L. Robertson, Hannah Zeters, Courtney Spilker, Victoria McCormick, Marique Rieger, Ashton Gabrielson, Brittany Gutierrez, Phelan, Julie Walton, The Meadows Family, Jennifer From the Block, Anna Penalber Alvarez, Fake Valentine, Brianna Jordan, Karu Teru, Sarah Saunders, McKenna Tweedy, Six Awkward Nine, Anthony Ruiz, Peter Mina, Heather Langille, Weekend of Dead Cat Ladies, Javi Guadalupe Trejo III, Darlene Kerr, Brad Harding, Thomas Chavara, Charlotte, Brianna Cusimano, Kevin Stewart, Laurie McDonald, Patrick Cribbin, Chris U2, Alex Romano, Bugaboo, Jarl Sviven, Haley Logan, Adam Graham, Emma Ashley Enstrom, Peter McGrath, Sophie Duda, Jack McMahon, Jen and Rose Daub, T Pixel Guy, Steamed Nuggets, and Kurt I Potter. Web design by Kelly Beckman, and the music is by Bettina Campomanes. If you want to find us on social media, you can at facebook.com/potterless, twitter.com/potterlesspod, instagram.com/potterlesspodcast, or reddit.com/r/potterless. For all information about the show, you can go to potterlesspodcast.com. For bonus content, you can go to patreon.com/potterless, and for merch, including those new merch items, you can go to bit.ly/merch on. If you want to tell someone about the show, whether it's directly or through review online, that helps a lot. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, as they say in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, wizard on!
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So I know you've got a lot going on. But remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.